and welcome to this AAT podcast as part of the AAT Members Weekend session on social and environmental accounting, sustainability and performance reporting, given by Professor Adrian Henriquez of the University of Middlesex. It is a deeper look at the GRI and the use of indicators in reporting. GRI stands for Global Reporting Initiative, a sustainability reporting standard. But why should we pay attention to the GRI in particular as a source of indicators for performance reporting?
Well, the GRI has been almost the only attempt to establish a set of sustainability indicators for company reporting. It is also a multi-stakeholder initiative. That is important in grounding the credibility of the resulting indicators, since there is a significant degree of consensus that the things which should be reported in a GRI report are the things which a wide set of stakeholders think are significant. Also, many of the best reporters make use of the GRI framework for sustainability reporting. Others may refer to the GRI without actually using the guidelines in any systematic way.
What sort of indicators does the GRI describe?
The GRI covers the three dimensions of sustainability: environmental, social, and economic. The GRI indicators are arranged in a structured way taken from the practice for classifying environmental indicators. The classification is organised on three levels. The first is a category. Categories cover the general class or grouping of issues of concern to stakeholders. Labour practices or market presence would be examples. The second is an aspect. Aspects are specific issues about which information is to be reported. For example, occupational health and safety or diversity. And the third level is that of the indicators themselves. These indicators may directly measure the substantive outcome sought, or they may reflect the management process that is addressing the outcome, such as training. The indicators can cover precise and often quantitative measures of performance during a reporting period, such as the percentage of total workforce represented in formal joint management worker health and safety committees that help monitor and advise on occupational health and safety programs. Another example would be rates of injury, occupational diseases, lost days and absenteeism, and number of work-related fatalities by region. Historically, the development of the social indicators within the GRI process was amongst its most challenging elements. One factor was the difficulty of selecting only the most important indicators for social impact. As a result, the number of social indicators in the most recent release, so-called G3, is still more than the number of economic and environmental indicators added together.
Does the GRI capture all facets of sustainability impact?
At one level, the answer to this question must be no, since the guidelines are intended to be of sufficient generality that they can be applied by any organisation. It follows that not every aspect of the impact for an organisation will be fully described. To some extent, the additional guidelines designed for particular industry or organisational sectors address that. Nevertheless, it is easy enough to identify important social issues which are missing from the list of social indicators, such as the maximum hours of work for employees. To an important extent, the GRI has provided for this by giving stakeholders and stakeholder engagement a significant role in determining report content. It would be quite within the spirit of the GRI, for example, to report on indicators which have not been specified in the guidelines should stakeholders request it. It would be expected, for example, that a Western organisation in the clothing industry, which outsourced its main production to countries in the South, would report on the maximum hours of work that are expected of their suppliers' workers. It has been particularly hard to identify substantive indicators for social impact, not only because it is difficult to define them, but also because, even where reasonable definitions can be found, it may be hard for companies to reveal their social performance against the indicators. As a result, there's been a particular emphasis on process indicators rather than substantive indicators in the first two generations of the GRI guidelines. This was widely regarded as unsatisfactory, and it is significant that the proportion of substantive social indicators significantly increased in the G3 compared to the previous versions. The GRI also differentiates between core and additional indicators in this way. Core indicators are those regarded as generally applicable and material to all organisations. The additional indicators are assumed to be material for most organisations, and an organisation is meant to report on these unless they are specifically ruled out.
Can you give me some detailed examples?
Well, an example of an environmental indicator would be that for greenhouse gases. Indicator number EN16 requires reporting on total direct and indirect greenhouse gas emissions by weight. Now, accompanying every indicator is a protocol which sets out precisely what should be done to arrive at an adequate evaluation of the indicator concerned. For EN16, this discusses what direct and indirect emissions are and provides references to the various international protocols available. It also requires considerable rigour in specifying how measurements are made in practice. So for direct measurement, the reporting should distinguish between site-specific data, for example for fuel composition, analysis, and so on, and calculations based on default data, and both of these from estimations. Another example, in the area of occupational safety, is indicator number LA6. This requires reporting of the percentage of total workforce represented in formal joint management worker health and safety committees that help monitor and advise on occupational health and safety programs. Other indicators cover areas such as human rights performance, and here companies are required to describe the training they give to staff on human rights issues.
And do they only apply to companies?
No. Although they were initially aimed almost entirely at company sustainability reporting, guidelines for public bodies have also been prepared, and ones for the voluntary sector are in preparation. However, it needs to be said that the company guidelines have been used as the base model. Those for other kinds of organisation are variations on that theme. And there is also a reasonably wide set of sector-specific guidelines for companies working in many areas from finance to mining or food processing to draw upon.
Can we tell from looking at a GRI report whether a company is sustainable?
That's a very important question. Now, one part of the answer is that in order to have confidence in the indicators reported, it helps if there is some verification or assurance of the report and its contents. The GRI has established a dual system for self-validation and third-party assurance to address this. But it is quite possible for an organisation to produce a GRI report with no independent view of its contents. A related question is whether the report is actually covering all the right issues, that is, the full set of impacts of the company. Assurance processes may or may not address this question. But unlike most areas of financial reporting, where the appropriate indicators are a matter of regulation, for sustainability reporting, this is far from the case. So this can add further doubt. But your question assumes that a company can be sustainable. Sustainability is not quite like that. Sustainability is actually a property of the planet as a whole. One company is only a small part of that story to tell. Of course, it is vital that companies are able to disclose what contribution they do make to sustainability in all its aspects. And the GRI is, so far, the best way to do that.
Adrian, thank you very much.